Welcome to the BritishBattles.com podcast on the Battle of Graspan. The battle, also known as the Battle of Enslin, fought on 25th November 1899 in the Boer War, leading to the British advance to the disastrous battles of Modder River and Magersfontein. My name is John McKenzie. I am the editor of BritishBattles.com. I write the text for the entries in BritishBattles.com. I also select the illustrations and draft the maps under my nom de carte of John Fawkes. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site for the Battle of Graspan, where you will see a number of illustrations and my map of the battle. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I invite you to send me your comments to info@BritishBattles.com. The Battle of Graspan, also known as Enslin, was fought on the western border of the Orange Free State, northwest of Cape Colony in southern Africa. It was fought between 9,000 British troops, led by Lieutenant General Lord Methuen, and 3,000 Boers, led by Commandant Coos de la Rey. The Boer War was a serious jolt for the British Army. At the outbreak of the war, British tactics were appropriate for the use of single-shot firearms, fired in volleys controlled by company and battalion officers, the troops fighting in close order. These tactics had to be entirely rethought in battle against the Boers armed with modern weapons. In the months before hostilities, the Boer Commandant General, General Joubert, bought 30,000 Mauser magazine rifles, firing smokeless ammunition. He also bought modern field guns and automatic weapons from Krupp, Creusot and Maxim. In error, Joubert bought high-explosive ammunition for the field guns, the appropriate ammunition for use in open battle being shrapnel. Most Boers were countrymen, running their farms from the back of a pony with a rifle in one hand. These rural Boers brought a lifetime of marksmanship to the war, an important advantage further enhanced by Joubert's consignment of smokeless magazine rifles. The Boer commandos, without formal discipline, welded into a fighting force through a strong sense of community. Field cornets led burghers by personal influence, not through any military code. The Boer commander, Viljoen, is said to have coined the aphorism, "We will win through God and the Mauser." Other than in the regular uniformed Staats artillery and police units, the Boers wore everyday civilian clothes on campaign. The British infantry were armed with the Lee Metford magazine rifle, firing 10 rounds. But no training regime had been established to take advantage of the accuracy and speed of fire of the weapon. Personal skills such as scouting and fieldcraft were little taught in the British Army. The idea of individual firing from cover was largely unknown, many regiments still going into action in close order. Some of the most successful British troops were the non-regular regiments, the Imperial Light Horse, the City Imperial Volunteers, the South Africans, Canadians, Australians and New Zealanders, who more easily broke from the habit of earlier British colonial warfare, using their horses for transport rather than the charge, advancing by fire and manoeuvre in loose formations and making use of cover, rather than the formal advance into a storm of Mauser bullets. The British artillery was a powerful force in the field, but was underused by commanders with little training in the use of modern guns in battle. The Royal Field Artillery fought with 15-pounder guns, the Royal Horse Artillery with 12-pounders, and the Royal Garrison Artillery Batteries with 5-inch howitzers and mountain guns. The Royal Navy provided heavy field artillery with a number of naval guns mounted on field carriages, devised by Captain Percy Scott of HMS Terrible. Automatic weapons were used by both sides. Having started the hostilities, the Boers found themselves without an achievable war aim. The only strategy that might have had a chance of success would have been to invade and occupy the whole of Cape Colony, Natal, and the other neighbouring British colonies. The two Boer republics did not have the resources to carry out such an extensive operation. In any case, they could not have prevented a British sea landing to retake the colonies. Once war was declared, the Boers invaded and occupied Natal as far as the Tugela River, but with Ladysmith holding out in their rear. The Orange Free State government was not prepared to allow its forces to advance further south in Natal. In Cape Colony, some of the citizens of Boer origins joined their brothers from the two republics, but most did not. The only other offensive operations the Boers carried out were to besiege Mafeking in the north and Kimberley near the Cape Colony border. Both sieges were unsuccessful and took up substantial Boer resources. Limited incursion was carried out into the central area of Cape Colony up to the area around Stormberg. A major difficulty for the Boer armies was that, although competent in defence, digging field fortifications and using their magazine rifles to great effect to defend them, the Boers lacked an effective offensive capability. The absence of formal military discipline made it difficult for the Boer commanders to devise strategies they could rely on their troops to carry out. As the British built up their armies and began to advance, defeat for the Boers became inevitable. After the Battle of Belmont, the British troops spent the night in camp near Thomas's farm, while the Royal Engineers repaired the railway line, supported by the armoured train. In the afternoon of 24th November 1899, Lord Methuen's force continued north towards the besieged town of Kimberley, marching parallel to the railway line. The 1st Scots Guards, with some Royal Munster Fusiliers newly arrived from De Ar, remained at Belmont, as there was believed to be a Boer commando of some 500 men still in the area. Methuen stopped at Swink's Pan, a station further north on the railway line, and camped. Boer scouts watching the column confirmed the presence of a Boer force, although it was not seen. At dawn on the morning of 25th November 1899, the 9th Brigade marched out, heading north, the guards being permitted to follow with the baggage in view of their major role in the battle the previous day. The armoured train provided support from the railway line. The 9th Brigade approached Graspan. The name refers to the circle of hills that surrounds the area, or Enslin Station, to find a substantial Boer force in position on the hills to the east of the railway line, covering the approach to Enslin Station. The Boers were positioned on a long ridge of low hills rising gradually from the veldt, beyond which was a further hill, the top being a precipitous ridge. The Boer force numbered around 3,000 men, equipped with a heavy gun, 5 field guns, a Maxim 1-pounder pom-pom and a Maxim machine gun, commanded by General de la Rey. It was not the force Methuen faced at Belmont. On the most northern of these hills was positioned a commando of 300 Transvaalers, newly arrived from Kimberley. Methuen resolved not to repeat what was seen as his error at Belmont in allowing an inadequate artillery bombardment to precede the infantry assault. The British artillery, comprising the 13th and 75th Field Batteries and two naval guns, began a bombardment of the Boer positions. The Boer guns replied, but being positioned individually, were unable to respond as effectively as the British batteries. The Boers had registered the ranges before the battle began, but the British guns moved, throwing the Boer guns off target. As on many occasions, the Boer use of high explosive rendered their fire less effective than the British use of airburst shrapnel, even when the Boer fire was accurate. The Boer gun that made most impression on the British was the one-pounder Maxim Pom-Pom, even though it was not effective in inflicting casualties. The Pom-Pom fired on the 18th Field Battery by way of indirect fire, with a Boer on the hilltop directing the Pom-Pom, which was on the reverse slope. The Pom-Pom fired some 200 rounds and achieved the deaths of two British horses and injury to five men. By the end of the artillery exchange, all the Boer guns were silenced, although not destroyed. The main effect on the Boer riflemen of the British gunfire was to cause them to take cover in the rocks at the top of the reverse slopes, inhibiting the Boer rifle fire. Realising that the Boer force was much stronger than he had been led to believe, Methuen heliographed for the Guards battalions on the march from Belmont to hurry forward. At about 7 a.m, while the British artillery was still firing on the line of hilltops, the British infantry began to advance. The Northamptonshires and Northumberland Fusiliers approached the left-hand kopjes. The naval brigade formed a storming party for the Boer position on the extreme right, with 2nd King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry moving around the hill on their right flank and the North Lancashires on their left. The British infantry attacked in rushes in open order up the hill to the Boer positions. The British army had learnt one of the major lessons of warfare against concealed marksmen, that officers must be as unobtrusive as possible. The Royal Navy had not. When his men went to ground, Captain Protheroe, Royal Navy, of HMS Doris, remained standing, an enormous man with a beard carrying a sword. He was soon shot and wounded. Commander Ethelston of HMS Powerful was also hit, but fatally. Major Plum was shot and killed, as was Captain Senior, both of the Royal Marines. The Royal Naval Brigade faltered in the face of the storm of rifle fire and its loss of officers, but was supported by the attacks on its right by the Yorkshire Light Infantry and its left by the North Lancashires. A further officer, Midshipman Cymbeline Huddart, was wounded for the third time, fatally. Captain Protheroe is said to have called out, "Men of the Naval Brigade, advance at the double. Take that copy or be hanged for it." The Royal Naval Brigade stormed into the Boer positions at the top of the hill, led by Lieutenant Taylor, Royal Navy, and Lieutenant Jones, Royal Marine Light Infantry. In the face of the British bayonet charge, the Boers left their positions, some hurrying along the top of the ridge to the east, and others descending the far side to their ponies and making off to the north. The 9th Lancers and Remington's Guides on the extreme British right attempted to pursue the retreating Boers, but came under a heavy fire from the kopje in the rear of the stormed positions. The British mounted men were forced to draw rein, while the Boers with their field guns made off to the north and east. British losses were 20 officers and men killed, and 165 wounded. The Royal Naval Brigade suffered 101 casualties from 365 men. Boer losses were estimated at around 220 dead and wounded. 30 wounded Boers were taken in a captured field hospital. The Jacob Stahl commando suffered 46 casualties from a strength of 180. Commandant Rissik and Mr. Jeppy, a Transvaal financier, were captured. No Boer guns were taken. The British force marched from the battlefield to Enslin Station. The day was extremely hot and the troops suffered from lack of water. Immense sums were offered to the engine driver for water from the tenders, but it is said the driver was adamant in refusing. Food rations were also short. The railway line beyond Enslin had been torn up by the Boers and had to be relaid and the telegraph line replaced. Once this work was complete, Methuen was able to resume his march north to Kimberley. The next battle would be at the crossing of the Modder River. Graspan was ordered as a clasp on the Queen's South Africa Medal, but is not a regimental battle honour. All regiments that fought in the South African War were awarded the battle honour South Africa with the dates of involvement. Following the loss of officers in the initial action north of the Orange River, army officers were required to reduce their profile by dulling their buttons and accoutrements, and where possible, to carry rifles in line with their soldiers. An army officer is said to have commented to a naval officer after Graspan, "It is utterly useless for you to go on as you do, for you will only all get killed in this sort of warfare. I saw your officers walking about in front of their men, even when the latter were taking cover, just as if they were carrying on board ship." During the Great Boer War, the Boer pom-poms acquired a fearsome reputation with British troops, largely due to the noise and the large number of projectiles fired. In fact, the pom-poms inflicted few casualties. Queen Victoria sent a telegram to the Royal Naval Brigade after Graspan, saying, "The Queen desires that you will convey to the Naval Brigade, who were present at the action at Graspan, Her Majesty's congratulations on their gallant conduct, and at the same time express the Queen's regret at the losses sustained by the brigade." The conduct of the small naval brigade in storming the Boer hilltop position at Graspan attracted considerable attention in the British press. The public imagination was particularly taken by Dickie, the fox terrier of Major Plum from the Royal Marines, found guarding the body of his dead master after the battle. A memorial was raised at Devonport to the Royal Naval Brigade personnel lost at Graspan. One of the officers wounded at Graspan was Captain C.A.L. Yate of the 2nd King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. Yate was at the beginning of an extraordinary career. He served on the northwest frontier of India and was attached to the Japanese Army in the Russo-Japanese War of 1905, for which he received Japanese decorations. He was qualified at interpreter level at German, French, and several Indian languages. It is thought that he may have carried out intelligence duties in Germany before the First World War. Cal Yate commanded the forward trenches of his battalion at the Battle of Lakato on 26 August 1914 in the First World War, when they were overwhelmed by the German attack and the British defenders taken prisoner. Yate was awarded the Victoria Cross. He died during an escape attempt from Torgau prisoner of war camp in eastern Germany. That is the end of this podcast on the Battle of Graspan. I hope you have enjoyed it and thank you for listening. I would invite you to look at the BritishBattles.com site on the battle, where you will find pictures of the battle and images of the regiments that took part with a map of the battle. Finally, I would invite you to look at the list of British Battles podcasts on www.britishbattles.com/BritishBattles-com-podcasts.